today. By 10 o'clock, some of the members will be joining the departmental budget processes in the Council of Provinces. There's also a sitting around 11 o'clock. So I think we must make it a bit snappy because our time is tight. I want to request that I put my video off because I'm in transit. And linked to that, I have requested the Honorable Member Shelly Makubela, as soon as we have started the meeting, because there's a possibility that I might be disconnected. There's a possibility that I might be disconnected, so she will take. We take this opportunity to welcome all the honorable members to this important meeting, and also the members of the Business Banking Association of South Africa, and all South Africans who are interested in this matter today, who may be joining us on different platforms that are provided by Parliament, to make Parliament accessible, to make Parliament transparent, and to ensure that members of the public of South Africa and anyone interested can follow on the discussions that are taking place in Parliament as we interact with various bodies as members of Parliament and committees. Ntate Boltina, do we have apologies?
Thank you, Chair. The only apology, Chairperson, we have is from, because we have invited to this meeting the chairs of portfolio committees in the legislatures on tourism. Unfortunately, Chair, this meeting it coincides their sitting as well, because the department is also tabling the budget in the NCOP. So some of them are unable to be with us. So that's the only apology I have, Chair.
Thank you very much, Ntate Boltina. Honorable members, we all know, as we welcome our colleagues from the association, we all know that South Africa is doing a painful process of having to deal effectively to manage the effects of COVID-19. So in our respective individual capacity, collectively as a society, corporations, business, and everybody else in the country like other countries do, we have to do everything possible to make sure that we ameliorate some of the consequences that are related to COVID-19, which is a reality that is going to be with us for the rest of our lives. Secondly, one of the responsibilities we have as a nation is gradually make sure that we build a South Africa that is prosperous, a South Africa that future generations can all embrace, because that future South Africa will have ensured that we do not discriminate people based on their color, on their creed, on their sexual orientation, on their economic standing in society, where they come from, whether they're from a village or they're from a township or a small town or a big town or a metro. So that's South Africa which future generations are going to embrace will be a consequence of current generation, young and old, do on their daily basis to make sure that we build that South Africa for future generations. We don't build it for the current generation. So future generations will have to inherit from us. That type of South Africa which will be having prosperity, where the problems of unemployment will almost not be there. Inequality will have been dealt with. These problems of hunger, of poverty will have been dealt with. So that's partly part of the contest that we thought that we should be meeting with the banking sector today so that we can discuss how the banking sector plays a role in ensuring that that future South Africa spoke about from a tourism perspective is being constructed today gradually, rent by rent, 10 rand by 10 rand, 100 by 100, a tau by tau, a million by a million as we move forward. So that this future generation can see that we did everything possible to build that type of a South Africa. So that's the context. Why we are meeting with the banking sector today to look at what role is the banking sector playing in assisting our people through the length and breadth of this country to make sure that they can participate meaningfully in the tourism sector broadly in the South African economy. Many of our people, particularly Black people, they don't have the necessary collateral to access capital. Many of them do not have the necessary in-depth capacity to run some of the complex transactions that relate to participation in the economy. So as a consequence of some of these challenges, many of the Black people find themselves in a situation where they still struggle to gain entry into the economy via the sector. So today we are with the banking sector, those who control the circulation of the borrowing of money, the lending of money in the Republic of South Africa, for us to discuss what role are you playing in making sure that we at least help our people to create this non-racial South Africa. But this non-racial South Africa has been created from the basis that we move from the minds of a divided nation, and we've been working on it for the last 6 years to construct a united, non-racial, non-sexist South Africa. As I said, our program is tied today. Some of the members will be joining NCOP at 10. Then there's another sitting at 11. So without wasting time, I'm now going to give over to the leader of the Banking Association of South Africa or whoever is designated a responsibility to do a presentation today. To do so, and I'm also giving over to Honorable Makubela to then make sure that she's the one who presides over the meeting. But I'll continue to be part of the meeting. Over to you, Honorable Makubela.
Good morning, honourable members, and good morning, colleagues. And we are most welcome to this meeting, as the chairperson has given his welcoming remarks. I will now take this opportunity to invite the representative from the banking sector of South Africa to give us their presentation. I know honorable members have been given the presentation, so they will be able to follow through also. Mr. Poltina, so that the person designated to give the presentation takes over.
Okay, thank you, Whip. We were advised that Mr. Mate is the one who will be leading the presentation, Chair. So I would suggest that if he is ready, then put the presentation on screen.
Thank you so much, Mr. Poltina. Mr. Mate, over to you.
Thank you, Chair. I will do the presentation. The MD and Chief Executive Officer of the Banking Association, Ms. Bongi Kunene, will do the introductions first, and then I will take over. So, Ms. Kunene, if I could just hand over to you quickly.
Thank you very much, Kulegani. Honorable members, we are pleased to be with you today. from the Banking Association South Africa. My name is Bongi Kunene. I am the Managing Director. Khulekani Mathe is going to do the presentation, but we also have members from different banks. We have Muzim Shambi, who is part of the Banking Association, Hangwi Lipadzi, who is our researcher on SME issues, and then we've got member banks, Standard Bank, FNB, ABSA, and Nedbank. When we take questions from yourselves, each of the member banks will introduce themselves to save time, which is already on the screen. So over to you, Khulekani.
Capitec is also represented here. So, Honourable Mercy, we take engagement very seriously. That is why we are here in numbers to try and respond to every aspect of the questions you may raise with us. So, just by way of quick introduction and give you a sense of the banking industry. On your screen, we are just the number of banks that operate in South Africa, divided based on mutual banks. So clearly, the banking industry is banks that we often refer to, but there are many other players in this industry. The Banking Association obviously exists to represent the members in relation to regulations and to make sustainable, profitable should say the big part and most important part of what it does is that we protect the savings of South Africans as custodians of the salaries that everybody, the funds of companies, etc. We are entrusted with those funds to make sure that they are kept safe, so that when depositors come back wanting their money is there. On the right-hand side of your slide, you will see that we indicate that the banks control roughly 6.6 trillion rand of assets. These assets are made up of 71% deposits, in other words, money that customers deposit with banks, and then you have a percentage of shareholder capital and other liabilities and borrowings in terms of bonds and so on. But this demonstrates that the largest majority, more than two-thirds of the money that banks have, belong to depositors, and we are entrusted to make sure that it is there, kept safe, so that when the owners want it, it is available to them. We also play a role in the economy of facilitating payments. You can imagine that on a daily basis, people are transacting and do all sorts of things. All of that is facilitated and runs on our infrastructure that we've created. About 870 billion rand of worth of transactions is processed every month. This sort of equates to about 20 million rand every minute gets processed by banks. In the course of doing our work, we also come across transactions that appear to be changing the requirements that are set out in the financial Intelligent Center Act, FIC, we are obligated to report those to the Financial Intelligent Center. And in the year 2020, as you can see on the screen, nearly 300,000 such transactions were reported to FIC. So clearly, we do not only facilitate these large transactions, but we are also obliged to ensure that if something doesn't fit in with legislation, we report that immediately, which we do. We work with regulators, the primary regulator being the Reserve Bank, but in the PIC model, obviously, we report to the Financial Sector Conduct Authority as well. And in terms of the credit business that we run, that is regulated by the National Credit Regulator. The role that banks play in the economy can be illustrated as we show in this slide. We lend to investors who invest in various projects in the economy. So when those loans are invested, and the investments go into expanding economic activity, and hopefully jobs are created in the process. The two pie charts that you see just demonstrate how this process that's outlined in the arrows works. You will again see that the largest share of money that we loan out we loan it out to customers. We also then buy government bonds and private sector bonds, which make up the totality of the lending that we do. On the right-hand side, it just demonstrates the types of loans that we make. A third is in mortgages of different kinds, whether commercial or non-commercial, and another third goes to overdrafts, loans, advances, and so on to companies. The other third is broken down into smaller bits, you know, which include credit cards and other types of loans that we issue. In terms of credit, this slide just tries to demonstrate that if you compare us to comparable economies like Turkey, Brazil, Poland, we lend, our lending is on par or slightly above our peers, and compared to the sub-Saharan Africa, we are way above that. And the point being the fact that we actually are lending to the economy, and we're doing so on par or better than some of our comparable or peers, as they say. We also contribute to job creation as an industry. The financial services sector as a whole, so not just banking, but you include insurance and other types of services company, pay 36% of all corporate taxes, which works out to something like 122 billion rand in terms of 2019. And this is 23% of GDP, although 36% of all taxes, although the sector makes up 23% of GDP. Also, employment increased over the period 2006 and now, the sector employs some 2.3 million people. The bar chart on the right just shows the employment by the six largest banks. It compares 2013 and 2020. So don't be fooled by length of the bars, but in fact it shows that in 2013 we employed about 167,000 people, and that's dropped a bit by about 5,000 because we are now at 162,000, which is just the largest, six largest banks alone. So this is again to demonstrate the role we play in the economy in terms of creating employment. Coming to the tourism sector, we concur with the chair's opening remarks, honorable members, that tourism is an important sector. It contributes in terms of job creation, 1.5 million indirect jobs, and some 740,000 jobs, 425 billion contribution to GDP, a large share of businesses in the tourism sector, as we understand, are small businesses. So we think that this discussion today is very important because it affects a large section of the economy. In fact, small businesses can and have the potential to drive economic growth, and so we agree that it is important to have this discussion. The Portfolio Committee invited us, BASA, to respond to the following questions, to talk about the funding facilities that are available to tourism SMEs, to talk about what the qualifying criteria are, perspectives that tourism SMEs are experiencing, and also talk about assistance that is provided by the banks and any suggestions we may have to improve SME funding. So we will now go through this quickly to leave time for questions and discussions. Just in terms of the funding facilities that are available, it's important to say that obviously banks lend to all sectors of the economy. Just about any sector you can think of, the banking industry lends to that. So we do not necessarily create sectoral focus. We lend to businesses on the basis of them being able to meet certain criteria. So the tourism sector, therefore, has access to the same lending facilities as clients in other sectors. And these include you know, the standard commercial products such as overdrafts, commercial asset finance. Term lend is essentially a lending for a specific term but for longer than a year to businesses. And mortgage-backed business loans, commercial property finance, and also against the credit guarantee schemes. You will also be aware that the banks were the implementers of the National Treasury and the SARB's COVID loan guarantee scheme. And some banks have enterprise programs which also provide funding to businesses. I cannot stress enough the fact we've made earlier that banks are deposit-taking institutions with a duty to extend credit in a manner that does not put the depositors' monies at risk. Just some sense of what we've learned and observations from the loan guarantee scheme. Although the performance overall did not meet expectations, but these two pie charts just give us a sense of what has been happening in that scheme. So on the right-hand side, it shows us that, and if I could just end using my cursor, if you can see it, that the lending by turnover band, so the turnovers are businesses that have a turnover less than a million. Between a million and million is band 2, band 3 is 20 million to 50 million, band 4 is 50 million, greater than 50 million and less than 100 million, and band 5, 100 million to 300 million and above. From this we can see that the largest share of the loans went to companies in band 2, which means it's companies with a turnover of a million to just less than 20 million. With all other bands having a lesser share. What is disappointing is that the companies in band 1, which is less than a million, had a very, very small share, which indicates perhaps that we need a more diversified set of funding sources as a country for those companies, because clearly some of them aren't able to meet some of the criteria for which we will talk about later. On the left side, we see that in terms of approvals, in other words, the loans that were approved, were also the majority was in band 2, which is a million to 20 million, and that 72% of all the loans. So clearly, although the numbers aren't as high as had been expected, but the scheme did target small businesses or reach small businesses as intended. Some of the high-level sort of parameters that were given to the industry by the Reserve Bank and National Treasury was that there was no turnover cap. Initially there was, and then it was later removed. that the maximum loan was to be no more than 100 million individual loan. Businesses, in order to qualify, had to have been in good standing as at the end of December 2019, and were required after month 13. And how it worked was that businesses were allowed to draw down the loan that's approved over 6 months, and then they had an additional 6 months in which they did not pay back, which makes sense. And then after that, they started repaying. So a total of approved loans by 27th March was 14,827, and the value was 18.1 billion rand. Some of the general qualifying criteria which each bank would then apply, this is not only to the loan guarantee scheme, but for all the commercial products that I've spoken about earlier. Obviously, there has to be an assessment of affordability, whether the business or the applicant can afford to repay the loan, and the viability of the business and sustainability, as well as sound financial and business management skills, credit worthiness, in other words, how they have managed their finances and credit previously to see whether or not they are credit worthy, and as well as the appetite of the respective banks for different types of credit, whether it's secured or unsecured. And they use different systems to assess these broad areas that I have referred to here. Our experience in the credit or loan guarantee scheme was that part of the reason why we did not reach too many companies was that because of the economic conditions, many businesses did not want to take on more credit, in other words, more debt, because they were uncertain of what the future holds, and that what would have been more suitable to their circumstances is different kinds of financial support other than credit. And of course, banks, as I have said, only offer credit because of the fact that we need the repayment so that we can pay back to the depositors. Some of the challenges that we have seen in our regions with SMEs more broadly is that obviously one of the big issues was the reduced tourist activities because of lockdowns, both here but also in other jurisdictions. The variant of the coronavirus that was detected in South Africa also had a negative impact or affected the tourism internationally. You know, some countries started to issue advisories against South Africa to their citizens because of that. And some businesses are still struggling, especially the very, very small one, if I can use the LGS bands in the 0 to 1 million turnover band. Difficulties with preparing relevant documentation that would allow them to present their case to finance providers, and obviously issues such as lack of collateral and mitigants to solve a banking risk, it seems to be another problem. The awareness of the different opportunities that are available, both in the private and the public sector, seems to be a challenge as well. And of course, linked to the very first point, access to market tends to affect revenues and therefore profitability. And in an environment like that, it's difficult to see how extending a loan to a company like that, how they would be able to pay back. A study that was done by McKinsey, just looking at the public sector, also made the same, came to the same conclusion that lack of awareness of funding opportunities was a major a problem. So one of the two numbers in the middle column, you know, the 64% shows that the 100 SMEs that were surveyed, they were asked whether they were receiving a government loan or any form of support. Just under two-thirds said yes, and the others said no. And when they tried to understand why that was the case, the top three reasons were: don't qualify, was not aware of them, or I was aware but didn't know where to find the information. So this just illustrates the point that we need to get more information out there, both in the public as well as the private sector, in terms of what is available so that businesses can take advantage of the opportunities. this just shows what BASA did during the first few months of the lockdown in terms of providing education, using and running radio campaigns on the different measures that were available, explaining how the payment holiday different banks made available, how they worked. We also worked with the insurance industry to talk about the different types of insurance, but in particular the credit insurance and how it worked. And we, and the response we got there was that in fact there was insufficient information out there. So listeners of the various radio stations really appreciated this information. In terms of assistance that we provided during the COVID-19, some of our banks were administrators of the South African Future Trust of just over R1 billion, which reached 9,066 SMEs, and over 90,000 employees were impacted through that particular project. We've spoken about the loan guarantee scheme. And there were payment holidays banks offered to customers in distress to the value of R33.6 billion in payment relief between April and September 2020. And relief reached or was in relation to 2.7 million individual credit agreements and 135,540 businesses took advantage of the debt rescheduling and payment holidays and the like. So clearly, there isn't enough in terms of support to the sector. We think that definitely debt available in a study that was done by the World Bank showed that more than 70% of all loans, of, in particular SMI, different other places, want to grow a small business sector because debt is not all businesses need, equity and different kinds of funding until they are able to meet the borrowing requirements of banks and they can take debt that they can pay. And that happens not in the first, second or third that usually happens. In terms of the tourism sector, obviously to stimulate local would be one of the important things that need to be done. The opening of travel globally will be a long-term booster for the tourism sector, and as long as still doubts about that, the industry or the sector will continue to be under pressure. Support that is provided by government at different national integrated has put together. One of the outputs there is to do an assessment and reform of laws impacting SMEs. We think this is an important part because small businesses tend to carry a disproportionate burden of laws that are well-intentioned, but across the board, both private and public, we need to simplify funding application processes. There is a need for business development initiatives, and we think corporates generally could enable SMEs by focusing their supplier development towards them and help them develop competitiveness. Other suggestions, and these are not just our own, they what we believe is absolutely so that for the sector to recover, there's going to need demand needs to start picking up. And part of how the demand picks up, the population are vaccinated, they will feel the need to go out and take advantage of the different offerings that are there. So just by way of conclusion, we agree with the tourism sector recovery plan, which as the private sector we contributed towards, that reigniting demand is important, rejuvenating supply and strengthening the capability of the sector is absolutely critical. And as we said, the recovery does depend on the rollout of the vaccination program so that the economy and the sector can opening up a bit more. Chair, I've rushed through the presentation. Hopefully, answer at you.
I will now invite members who are going to engage on the presentation. Show the hands on our members on the icon. And if you do not have any icon, just go to the chat box and if you have intentions to pose questions or clarity from the presenters. I see Ms. Sithole, who will be followed by the Honorable De Freitas, followed by the Honorable Mute.
The one that has been affected when it's come to tourism and the transfer businesses
perhaps 16. But actually educate a lot of these small business owners that actually have what their roles and obligations are and what is required of them. Because the reality is there are so many good businesses that exist, but the business owners are not in a position to even understand, because they've just never been given opportunity, of how banks work and how they can be beneficial to these businesses. So perhaps if I could get an answer on that. Otherwise, I have no other questions. Thank you very much.
Honorable Matika.
Thank you very
Honorable
much.
Honorable Matika.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you, but can you increase your volume a little bit or come closer to us?
Okay, thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me welcome the presentation from Baza. Let me also pass greetings to my colleagues and the staff who are making these decisions to happen. Chairperson, I want to ask the Bank Business of South Africa or Association of South Africa questions that are related to transformation. Chairperson, the committee have set a tone of transformation, and that transformation goes to the villages, townships, and the small towns. So my question to the banks is, aware of this goal that the Portfolio Committee of Tourism wants to achieve, and if you are aware, what I mean to make sure that it is happening? What are you bringing on board? By that, Chairperson, I want to ask them, in the villages, in the coming 5 years, what are they planning to do to turn things around? Because when we talk of tourism recovery plan and all that, it's more about the existing businesses. Yes, that must happen. We mustn't kill any existing business. We must support that. At the same time, we must make sure the rural child, the village child, is also getting benefit from tourism industry. So my question is, in the next 5 years, each bank must tell us, what are they planning to do for the village people, for the township people? We can see tourism is more in the big cities. The tourism infrastructures is more in the big cities. So we want it in the villages and in the small towns, so that the rural economy can grow, so that we don't have more population that goes to the cities and leave the villages. So I want to know from the business, from the banks, what are they going to do in the next 5 years? The very same passion they are applying to bring people on board in terms of them getting personal loans, because they are all over recruiting people, getting people to get personal loans. They must use the very same passion to take things to the rural areas and the townships. So I think in the next meetings they must come with a plan on, like for example, as APSA, we intend to do the following in these villages, in these provinces. As Capitec, we are going to do this so that we can know the banks are moving in line with what we want to achieve as a portfolio committee of tourism. Because this thing of transformation as a slogan doesn't work if we don't put the actions, the plans and the actions in place. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Motika. I will now invite the Honorable Melina Komba.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Chair, let me start by welcoming the presentation. So my first question will be about the approval of the loan by the banks. My concern here is those small businesses which were previously disadvantaged, which are coming from people who were previously disadvantaged. You'll find that most of them don't have collaterals they can put in front of the bank as a requirement for them in order for them to receive the loan. So I want to find out what is it that the banks are going to do or are doing in order to assist such small businesses that cannot put their properties as collateral and many other things that are needed by the bank, even if the business is viable or the business plan looks lucrative. What is it that the banks can do to ensure that they unlock those hiccups that ensure that people are getting those financial assistances from the banks? Is there any way that such businesses can be assisted? Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Komba. I will now invite the Honorable SOR Mahumapilu. Honorable SOR.
Chairperson, about three things from my side. And firstly, thank the collective for the presentation they have done and honoring the invite to the committee. The first matter relates to the payment holidays, which were a consequence of the banks responding to COVID. What is their analysis in as far as feedback is concerned from the beneficiaries of that offer, which was made by the bank? So in simple terms, what I want to know is, in percentage terms, how many people within the tourism sector may have opted for that particular facility, and in return, what was the response in terms of repayment? Did the majority of people, entrepreneurs who opted for that facility, were they able to do their repayments? And if not, what were the reasons that were given or provided by them to the banks for them not to comply with the stipulated agreement in as far as that particular option is concerned? Number two is the extent to which the actual profit of the banks, remember when the bank borrows you money, there is some interest that you need to pay. and the interest is linked to the anticipated profits that the banks will be making out of those particular transactions. So what I know is, whether through all these offers that the banks made as a consequence of COVID-19, did it affect the returns, the profit, the actual profit of the bank? And if so, what has been the extent in percentage terms of that effect? Number three, I want to suggest, Chairperson, that we agree with the banking sector that maybe we have an annual interaction of this nature. And I will suggest that in future, if we agree that it must be annual, we dedicate a day to deal with this particular matter and not ours. I'm just suggesting so because tourism is not an isolated kind of a variable in the broader economy. For instance, I would want us in those interactions to look at the entire value chain in as far as the tourism sector is concerned. What it means is that on that particular day, we will have, for instance, people who are from the agricultural sector who supply everything that we eat. We will have people who come from the transportation and aviation sector. We will have people from the security sector. We will have people from the arts sector and sports, right? So that we can discuss the entire value chain and how the banks are playing a role in each one of those particular variables in the value chain. So I will suggest that we look at that proposal, and if the banking sector agrees, let's then agree that that's what we'll be doing on an annual basis, so that all of us can look as to whether we are making progress or we are not making progress in as far as this particular matter. And the last matter from my side here is a proposal to our colleagues from the banking sector. The performing arts are an important catalyst in as far as tourism is concerned. So we as tourists, one of the things we consume is the arts. And in that context is the performing arts. There's also visual arts and so on. So I want to suggest to the banking sector that one of the things we want to consider around the performing arts is that if Honorable Makubela is an artist, he runs events, and there's event this coming weekend, and the bank is happy with the preparations, with the possible success of the event and so on, can they come up with some kind of a funding, which is a quick loan kind of event where you get the money for the event, and by Monday when the event is done, you return the money. And then when you have an event again next month, it's just like that. So it's for that particular, it's tailor-made for that particular event, for artists, because artists are an important ingredient, as I say, a catalyst in driving tourism. I know that the banks on that front may have some challenges with regard to interest rates, because the profit motive of the banks is based on interest in as far as whatever loan that is issued is concerned. The profit is based on bank charges and so on. So I want to suggest that as part of the banking sector contributing and foregoing things like anticipated returns on the loan, if you think the level of risk in the event is almost close to zero, why don't we finance that artist for the weekend? And then the money comes back, and the bank has got its money back. So it's a win-win for those who don't have the means to have their events, but also it's a win from a branding credibility for the banking sector, because all and sundry will now see that the banks are indeed, in addition to many other things that they are doing, contributing to the upliftment of our people, who find themselves in the arts, and the arts as an important ingredient in terms of contributing to what we consume. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, the Honorable S.O.R. Mahumapilo. I will now invite the Honorable Winkler. Honorable Winkler. Since Honorable Winkler is not on the platform, I will now invite the Honorable Sanganani Gumbi.
Hi.
Yes, over to you, Gumbi.
Hi, Chairperson. No, I am covered by the Honorable De Freitas. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Ms. Honorable Gumbi. I see the Honorable Wink has also indicated that she has reception issues, so she is unable to speak because there's the network coverage where she is very bad. I will now invite the Honorable Mpushe. Honorable Mpushe.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, greetings to yourself and the Honorable Members. The collective from Leadership Hub, Chair, from BASA, Chair. Thanks.
Thank you very much. I will now invite BASA to respond to the questions and the comments from the Honorable Members.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you to the Honorable Members for the questions. Really, really appreciate them. I will make the first attempt at providing answers, and then invite if any of the representatives of banks that are part of our delegation want to add to the answers. Firstly, to Honorable Sithole, on the awareness hearing that we referred to here, we were highlighting the campaign that we ran during the early days of the onset of COVID-19, and when we had these different support measures in place like payment holidays, debt restructuring, rescheduling, and all of that stuff to make sure that consumers and customers understand them and they can take advantage of those. And just to try and respond to the concern that he raised about rural and township businesses, obviously those campaigns we are talking about here were not directed to tourism businesses. We were just trying to reach as many businesses that and customers, individual customers that were affected. We specifically decided to do this using community radio as a medium to try and reach those communities so that we can interact with people on a medium that they're familiar with and that they are more comfortable in. So we ran a whole lot of these through community radio stations precisely to reach local communities with our message. Outside of this, we have a financial education program as BASA, with each bank contributing to that program in different ways. And the aim of this is really to try and create a customer base that is informed and that is aware of what is available, but that can make the right financial decisions. We do this on an annual basis. Part of this is prescribed in the financial sector code, the amount that we need to spend on this initiative, and we use different platforms for our ongoing consumer financial education. We use social media, we use TV, we use radio, and prior to COVID, we used a lot of face-to-face where we would go to communities and give a consumer financial education. In the COVID era, we've had to look at other ways of reaching customers in where they are without having to physically go there because of the regulations. We can definitely do better, and we take the message from members. We have a committee that looks after this, that we will take this message back to them to see how they can improve on what they're doing. In terms of the scammers, sure, there's so many of them. We don't even know all of them that are there, but what I can say is that we have an organization called Subric, Banking, South African Banking Risk Organization, sorry, I'm forgetting the acronym, whose job is to really look at all of these things and come up with educational messages, educating customers on what to avoid so that you do not get caught up in these many, many scams. And so this is an organization which is more like BASA, created by banks jointly to try and fight cyber crime and all manner of banking crime that happens. There are various other, obviously, authorities who are looking keenly at these things. And when banks do become aware of this, we report them so that they can be closed down before they cause too much harm. Our experience is that they tend to be quite nimble. They change strategy all the time to try and scam people. What we can say, and this is a function of a good consumer education, is that if it looks too good to be true, it probably is. Do not take it up. Try and find out more about it before you give your money or your information to somebody who is offering you the world. It just doesn't work like that. Most things have to be worked for. And just to Honorable De Freitas, in terms of the awareness programs, and in particular the questions he raised about assistance to small businesses that may have a very sound case but not know how to go about it. What I would say is obviously some of our colleagues on the call may want to give some examples of what possible things can be done. But I think a broad point to be made here, and it's something that we raise consistently in our engagements with our counterparts in government, is that there is the recognized issue of there being a problem in the ecosystem that supports small businesses. There are gaps in the ecosystem. We have a banking sector that is recognized as being world-class, offering debt, but as I've said, not all businesses require debt. Other forms of support, business development and business services, which should be offered by different institutions, aren't always readily available, and they would be important in closing this gap of helping small businesses get educated about what funding options are available, how do you get ready to take advantage of those. And this is something that we constantly engage on and try to play a role in creating a complete and more functional ecosystem to support small businesses. We're not there yet. We are just one part of that ecosystem. And with the facilitation of government, I think we can start to build the other bits that are missing in that ecosystem. But we agree with the sentiment expressed that it is an important thing to do. In fact, we find that sometimes we are approached by people who are just not ready in terms of not being able to produce and present information that would make them qualify, exactly the point we made during the presentation. To Honorable Moteka, maybe some of our members may be aware of the goal of the Portfolio Committee on Tourism. I certainly wasn't in terms of the specific sort of elements of that and what you've set out for the next 5 years. Of course, we are aware that you want to drive transformation in this sector and make sure that there is support provided to small businesses. and as far as possible in our engagements with government, which we have had earlier, is to really see what role we could play in providing more and better targeted support. So we will educate ourselves on the specific goals that the committee has set itself and what role we can play in that specifically. And but also let me just say while we're still on this that BASA has produced and published only last month a comprehensive report on transformation in the banking industry, because we are required in terms of the financial sector code to transform and targets are set. And so we put out a report every year in which we report on what we have achieved, because we believe transformation is important. And one element of that transformation is financing small businesses. And so we account for how we have performed in relation to that. It is available on our website, and we would be happy to present it to this committee if this committee is interested. But it covers all areas of transformation and not only the tourism sector. And to Honorable Gomba, in terms of the approval of applications from disadvantaged communities, I think the point here relates also, and I will invite members of our delegation if they want to add to this, but this is a real example of the missing parts of the tourism or small business sector ecosystem, because in other jurisdictions you have systems in place, for instance, for looking at the use of movable assets as part of your surety or collateral. And so I think there's a lot of work that needs to be done there. But in order for that to be a recognized form of collateral, you also need to have a proper system of how that gets registered and so on. And these are debates and conversations that are going on in the small business support world in looking at how best we can provide support and overcome these challenges, which do tend to leave our people out unsupported. And in response to Honorable Maumapelo, I should start by saying that Honorable Maumapelo, you should have been a banker. You really understand the world of banking very well, and thank you for all your questions and comments. Just in terms of the payment holidays, that your first question, we have not done a sectoral analysis of how many of the businesses that took up the offer were from the tourism sector. What we can say is that this was a short-term measure that was meant to help businesses and individuals during the hard lockdown and the higher levels, alert levels, when there was no economic activity. What has started to happen is that as the economy started opening up, borrowers have started servicing their credit agreements, and so there has been an improvement in that. In fact, many of the banks reported, and this goes to your second question, many of the banks reported last year major reductions in earnings as a result of COVID, because they've had to take these measures. So money that they would have collected immediately under normal circumstances had to be rescheduled so that it's only collected later as a consequence of the payment holidays and so on. So the reports last year of a reduction in earnings were staggering. Just about all banks were upwards of 40%. So that was a huge, huge impact on the banks. We think that things are going to improve. Obviously, don't have the numbers. Banks report individually on this, You would have heard about the advisory from Standard Bank of things looking up a bit. So I'm pretty sure that the impact is there, but this year will look a lot better compared to last year because of all of these extraordinary measures that had to be taken in response to COVID. As the industry, we would welcome the engagement annually with the committee, because banking exists as a service to society, as a service to this economy. So we would want to be there, hear out members of parliament, but other sectors of society, so that we can be of better service. So we definitely would take up that opportunity if it becomes available. I have to say that the suggestions around performing arts and having products that are, meet particular needs of the performing arts is not something that I personally have looked into. I don't know if any of my colleagues have, but this is innovative. I'm pretty sure that my colleagues will take these ideas back to their product development teams to see what can be done about it. But I can't say here whether it's something that would be feasible or not, but it certainly is innovative, which is why I think that Honorable Mahume Pelo would make a good banker. And thanks to all other honorable members for the question. May I just ask my colleague...
Maybe I will join you one day.
You should. let me share with your permission, see if any of my colleagues want to add a word or two, and if not, we will immediately move forward. So, colleagues, if you could just indicate with a show of hands to the chair if you want to add any comment to what I have said. I do not see any further comments from my members, Chair. So that would be our response.
Thank you very much. Allow me then, honorable members and colleagues from the banking sector, to take this opportunity and thank you for this meaningful engagement that we had with you this morning. It is an eye-opener, and we are able to consume the content that you have given us and then take it back to our constituencies. And we are able to reflect as honorable members and see where there are policy gaps and where there is legislation gap, where we can intervene and see how best we can strengthen the sector, and where we can ensure that where there are many red tapes or there are stringent measures that do not allow for easy entrance from our SMEs into accessing the much needed loans and resources to grow their businesses, what can be done? It's now upon us as members of parliament to sit down and see where there are policy gaps, where legislation, where the red tapes are stringent. How best can we put together our heads and ensure that we minimize this so that our people are able to access these resources? Honorable members, let me take this, as I was taking this opportunity to thank the banking sector for this engagement. We are hoping this is not the last engagement from yourselves, but we will be engaging in the near future with yourselves. Honorable members, allow me to also welcome some of the honorable members. I see we have the Honorable Faiz Jacobs, who is sitting in the Businesses and Development Portfolio Committee. We have also seen an honorable member from Northwest, I assume is the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee there on Economic Development. Allow me to welcome you to the meeting, and those that I have not been able to see, as I'm acknowledging, it is not an omission for myself, but it is just that I was not able to be alerted that you are in the platform.
Chairperson, we will acknowledge ourselves. We are in the platform indeed.
Thank you, Honorable April, for that. You are most welcome. You are a member of this portfolio committee. Hence, I did not acknowledge you because you belong to this portfolio committee, unless you have forgotten that you are an alternate member in this portfolio committee. And all members of the portfolio committee were acknowledged and welcomed in the when the meeting started. Honourable members, let's move on. I see the Honourable Kulegani Mate has I see your hand is up. It's not the Honourable. I need
yes, I'm not.
Mr. Mate, I have just given you the honour.
Yes, Chairperson, I will decline the honour. I am not an Honourable Member of Parliament. Chair, thank you for affording us the opportunity. May I just steal 1 minute of your time? I didn't see one of our members wanted to add a comment to the responses, and I didn't see the when they indicated so to me. If I could just ask for 1 minute and invite Mr. Jesse Weinberg from FNP to add to one of the comments I made, and then after that we will take leave of your meeting. Sincere apologies, Honourable Chair.
No problem, Mr. Mate. The person can be invited. FNP?
Yes.
The platform is yours.
Committee. Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. Thank you for having us this morning. I thought that just in response to some of the questions, I think it might be useful to hear some of the insights from a bank. And obviously, as part of the BASA and SME committee and its BASA, we are very lucky to have such a great collection of, well, collective of people that are involved around the table. I just wanted to make a comment specifically with regards to what more are banks doing with regards to transformation, to SME education, and of course, helping the tourism industry from a developmental perspective. And I think it's worth noting that banks are currently more than ever in a very aggressive competition with each other. Because as you know, many of the banks have had significant losses due to COVID, significant write-downs on lending, and obviously even things like their share prices going into free fall, which has all sorts of implications. But what it does mean is that with this increased amount of competition between banks, more than ever, there is an additional drive to provide more than just being a bank. And this extends into the value propositions which banks are continuously looking to offer the market and to offer South Africa. And this is a very good thing for the country and the tourism sector, because it means that in order to win customers to choose us, for example, as their bank, or to choose Nedbank as their bank or Absa as their bank, a customer really needs to feel that they are getting value because they've got choices. And we've seen in the last few years that all the banks have really done really well in terms of providing things like business education, developmental hubs, enterprise and supply development programs. And there's been a notable shift away from seeing development of SMEs as just a tick box exercise to rather something that needs to be done in order to grow SMEs and businesses of the future, so that banks do actually have clients in the future. And I think it's very encouraging from what we've seen with all the members around the table of significant amounts of funds and money which have been invested into things like developmental education programs, awareness programs, even if it is access to markets of facilitating connections between businesses. One of the things that we're very proud of on the FNB side, for example, is we launched a mass scale free electronic education program, which is on our app, which is available for free. Called Fundaba, which lets businesses in five different languages access educational material. And this, along with other things that other banks have done, have really started to spur a great amount of activity and encouraged competition between the banks to see who can do more by trying to help the country and help SMEs. And of course, that means helping the SME and tourism industry. It also means that we are entering certainly a stage where, although we are constrained in some senses of what a bank can actually do, we can only lend by law according to customers that can actually repay the loan. We do recognize, though, that there's other ways that we can try and help businesses. And so a loan is not the answer to all of the problems. Loans are governed, they are legislated, they are strictly adhere to ensure that we protect SMEs as well as as individuals from going into further indebtedness and putting them in a situation where they're in further financial trouble. So apart from the loans, what it has done is it highlighted that we can collaborate more with government. We are constantly talking about how we want to extend the invite to government to see how we can further collaborate, for example, on things that are beyond our control. So perhaps where we can only lend in certain places, maybe we can then collaborate with government to see how we can help increase revenues of those businesses if there are obstacles in their way. I guess in conclusion, it's very much a two-way partnership for us, because there are certain things that we can do that government can't do, and there's certain things that government can't do that we can do. And it's very much on that basis that I think a lot of the difficult answers have to be landed on collectively. In closing, what I just want to say is that there is a labeling of banks that we're not doing enough, and that we are not in touch with some of the imperatives of the country and the nation. And I think sometimes those comments are unfair, just from speaking from a place of listening to the amount of energy and dedication and discussions and initiatives and funding that are done by the banks, where it is absolutely our top priority to not just be part of, but really try and even fast track the imperatives of the nation and SMEs and all of the things that need to happen to make the country a better place. And it's probably just important to mention that there are incredibly driven, good and intelligent people behind the scenes to try and make everything work. And I think, yeah, it's just worth noting that together with even more collaboration with the government, the things that are beyond our control, for example, a global pandemic, which has restricted, for example, international travel and even provincial travel at times, that we can combine our collective resources and thinking, and the solutions can be even more, even better and more powerful than if it was just left up to private sector. So on that note, I just want to thank you for the opportunity for us to be part of this presentation. And there is lots of excitement around future collaboration. And certainly we don't just see this as a once-off exercise, and there are continuous things which are happening to help the tourism sector. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. from FNP. At this moment, honorable members and colleagues, allow me to take the banking sector and ask them to exit the platform, as we are going to be continuing with our business of the day as the portfolio committee on tourism, and which we are going to talk about shortly. Thank you very much, members of the banking sector and other colleagues are exiting. Honourable members, we have outstanding issues and matters to take care of as the portfolio committee. But however, in the interest of time, because we have a sitting now at 11 o'clock, which is an extended public committee, which is an EPC, can I then invite Mr. Boltina to tell us whether we will be able to take through the next item, or we should take over that item to the next portfolio committee meeting?
Thank you. Thanks, Whip. I'm not sure. I see the chair's hand is up. I'm not sure whether it's an old hand or is it a new hand, Chairperson?
I think it's an old hand.
Oh, it was not lowered.
Yeah, it was not lowered.
Okay. Whip, I wanted to just to indicate to the committee the item on the next item on the agenda was just for the committee to indicate whether they agree with us with the draft minutes of the 11th of May. The committee will recall on that day we were adopting the the budget vote of the portfolio committee and also in preparation for the debate that was on the 18th. So the minutes were drafted and then also they were circulated. The only issue would be just whether the committee is agreeing with us. That is a true reflection of the deliberations of that day. That is the only thing that we want to raise. Then the other thing that we can also raise to the committee is the fact that members will recall that there was this proposal of a trip to oversight visit to Limpopo. So we have deferred that to August. The parliament is urging parliament, committees to finalize their businesses on the 4th of June, and then the constituency commences on the 7th of June. Then what is going to happen? We are aware that there is a proposal that will be taken by the NA Programming Committee to the Joint Program Committee. That is the 17th of August up to the 3rd of September. Those dates must be also be allocated to committees of the National Assembly. So we want to align our proposal regard as well. If there would be enough money, we may also suggest to the committee that when we do that, we know that we will take simultaneously maybe two provinces, Limpopo and the other province. Then the date we may look at the 17th of August up to the 21st of August. And then for the second province, and then we may look at the 30th of August up to the 3rd of September. That was one of the proposals that we wanted to make to the committee. But subject whether that is being approved by the Joint Programming Committee, is it going to sit this week on Thursday? Those are all things that we just wanted to indicate. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Poltina. Honourable Members, can we refer to the sets of minutes? And can I then invite an Honourable Member who is going to call for the adoption of the minutes as a true reflection of what transpired in the Portfolio Committee, and then can I get a mover for that? I will see with a show of hands, Honourable Members. Can I get a mover for the adoption of the minutes? I note you, Honorable Gomba.
Thank you, Chair. I move for the adoption of the minutes, Chair. Thank you.
Honorable Gomba has moved for the adoption of the minutes as a true reflection of what's transpired in the Portfolio Committee. Can I get a seconder? Honourable Members, can I get a seconder? Honourable Gomba has moved for the adoption of the minutes.
Seconded, Chair.
Honourable Mpushe has seconded. Thank you very much. Honourable Members, Mr. Poltina has taken us through the amendments to the program, and then we will await. He has also communicated that to us earlier on. We'll then await the meeting of the programming committee. At this moment, honorable members, let me take this opportunity to thank all the honorable members for this engagement which we had in the portfolio committee meeting, and then remind that members that there is a sitting now at 11 o'clock. There's also a sitting at 2 o'clock. Can I encourage honorable members to log in to the sitting at 11 o'clock and also to log in to the National Assembly sitting, which will also be at 2 o'clock. Honorable members, I take this opportunity to thank you for your participation in the meeting, and then the meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Thank you, Chair.
Well done, Chair.